This is past.
So start.
Yeah. It's.
I'll try again.
Okay. Here we go.
And now
this is Passport.
Passport.
That's Passport.
Two.
Identity.
Yeah. Wait. Session what?
Three.
All right. So we've talked about independence. We've talked about what does it mean to be a man. Both incredibly important topics. But in this session, we're going to talk about what I think is the most important thing we'll talk about this entire weekend. So listen close. Because if you understand what we're going to talk about here, you'll have the foundation you need to face whatever challenge comes in your teen years and in your whole life.
I remember spring of my senior year in high school, I was with a group. It was a kind of a youth group. We'd all been together for 3 years.
This is my friend Bob Lapine.
And I remember our youth leaders saying, here's what's going to happen. You guys are going to go off to college, and most of you are going to start drinking. Most of you are going to start messing around. Some of you are going to do drugs. Some of you are going to start fooling around with girls or with guys. And it wasn't like he was trying to say, that's okay. It's not like he was saying, you should. And it wasn't even like he was saying, you can't help it. He was just saying, I've seen this happen before. And I remember thinking two things. The first thing I thought was, not my friends. My friends aren't going to do this. They have stronger convictions than that. And then I remember thinking, and not me. I'm not going to do that. And what was interesting was a few years later, I mean, I was hearing from my friends about getting drunk regularly at college or about sleeping around or about just different stuff that they were doing. But I just remember being astounded. What happened between high school and college to cause the convictions they'd had in high school to suddenly erode, and now they were just out partying and doing what everybody else was doing?
Okay, what Bob is talking about here is his experience after high school. But I imagine you're already seeing some of this with the guys and girls you know. I saw it happen too. But why? Why does this happen?
I think there are a lot of kids growing up in Christian homes and in churches today. And here's what they're hearing about what Christianity is. They're hearing what a sociologist at Notre Dame called moralistic, therapeutic,
yeah,
deism.
Dude. I think my brain just exploded.
What that means is they're hearing deism. There is a God, kind of a generic God. He's out there. He created everything. He's in charge of everything. And then they're hearing the therapeutic part. This God wants you to be happy. He wants you to have a happy life. He wants things to go well for you. And then they're hearing the moralistic part. If you just keep the rules and do what you're supposed to do, then God will bless you and life will go the way you want it to go.
I knew that true love waits, that we shouldn't drink beer, we shouldn't cuss, and any movie that was not about the crucifixion of Christ and was R-rated, you should not watch. We grew up in this, do this, don't do this. Well, that's moralistic deism at its best.
And what's happening is a lot of these young people who are growing up hearing that there is a God, he loves you, he cares about you, he wants you to have a good life, and if you just keep the rules, that'll happen. Well, they get to college, they get off on their own, and they go, that's not true, because they start to experience hard times. They start to experience suffering, and they're going, wait, I played by the rules. I didn't do what the other kids did. I thought that guaranteed me a suffering-free life.
We walk away from the church when, with our best white knuckles discipline, we accomplish those feats of morality, and then you let something bad happen to us. You let a girl break our hearts. You let us not get into the school that we wanted to get into. You let our parents divorce, and our mindset is, I was good, and this is how you repay me. I behaved, you owe me. And that's how you get the de-churched. They were sold. Here's how you put God into your debt.
But you don't put God into your debt. I know this because really, really faithful men in the scriptures have it go really, really bad for them.
Okay, now we're getting into the deep end of the pool. This concept is critical because rule keeping doesn't satisfy. But it's not just rule-keeping that will give you problems.
I think there are other kids who get off to college and they go, wait, nobody told me how much fun sin can be. And they get off into this stuff thinking the church has lied to them because it's tried to keep good things from them, or their parents lied to them, trying to keep them from stuff that really is fun. And they wind up a few years into college, not going to church. Their life is being lived with completely different values because they found that sin is more fun than they realized it was going to be, and they want to indulge in that for a while.
Bob, you're really driving at a key issue here, and it's the problem of people not having a faith that's firmly grounded in Christ. It's grounded in something else. It could be in their parents' belief, or what a pastor has told them, or a youth leader, or someone they admire. But just following what other people believe, that's not going to be enough to sustain you long term. You have to have a genuine relationship, a personal relationship with Jesus, one you can call your own. This really is the big issue we want to tackle in this session. How do you make your faith your own? And to figure this out, let's unpack the issue of authority. And to understand authority, let's talk about sailing.
No, you messed up there. You said sailing.
Sailing.
Like on a boat, sailing?
Yes, on a boat.
What are you talking about, sailing on a boat? What does that have to do with the issue of authority?
We'll see. Get out of here. We're done with you. You've already talked. Thank you. As I was saying, sailing. Out on the wide expanse of the open sea, drifting along, complete freedom, without a care in the world, going wherever you want. But are you really that free?
My name is Danny Jones.
My name is Dawson Jones.
We were missionaries in Eastern Europe for 14 years. So Dawson had grown up in Eastern Europe.
Tak som šťastne ženatý, už pár rokov, ešte nemáme deti.
And God blessed my wife Claire and I with 8 kids. And I am grateful for those experiences that opened up many, many opportunities for me as a dad with my kids. We were at a staff conference, and we're a bunch of dads sitting around talking about Wild at Heart. And one of the other dads in our organization began talking about the idea of sailing. He had gotten his sailing license, so he's now able to rent and sail a yacht by himself. He had one son who was about 14 at that time, and I had two sons. One was 16 at that time, and one was 12 at that time. So the two dads with the three sons and just had planned this thing out for it to be a real time of connection and teaching in the lives of our sons. It was a beautiful day. The sun was shining, and there was a perfect wind for sailing. And we rented the yacht and went to Croatia and spent the next week sailing from island to island around the Adriatic Sea.
It was very much an adventure from the very beginning.
It was a great day. And it was probably halfway or toward the end of the trip, and we were really sailing well. So I had a bright idea, and there was a rope that was at the end of the boat, and so I decided to lower myself out into the water behind the boat, and I'm basically body surfing behind the sailboat just to cool off, and it was great.
I'm 16, and I'm the oldest of the second generation there, so obviously I need to follow suit, and so Captain actually wasn't so cool.
Listen,
about that.
I know, but I want my son to have the experience. He needs to do it too. I'm telling you.
And so I said, oh, come on, Niall. He's 16. It's not that big of a deal. So we go back and forth, and he's pretty adamant not to do it. And I'm pretty adamant that I'm the dad in this moment. And so I kind of threw the dad card on the table. And at that point, it's going to get into a pretty heavy altercation if Niall does anything else, because I'm just insisting that Dawson do this.
He's able to do this.
So he let it go.
And so I go for it.
He lowers himself down in the water, and it's just like I thought it was going to be. He's fine, and so things are going great.
It What he doesn't know is that as soon as I lowered myself in the water, my swim trunks start kind of coming off. And so it looks like I'm doing okay, but actually I'm struggling to keep my swim trunks on. And as I'm doing that, my hands start slipping and I keep getting closer and closer to the end of the rope.
I begin to see what's going on. I see him spreading his legs. I see him slipping. And then the whole thing happens so fast. He's just sucked out. He's gone. Niall, because he knew what he was doing, grabbed a lifesaver and throws it out. I'm panicked at this point, and we're going so fast that it is like literally a matter of seconds, and he is a dot on the horizon.
I kind of go a little crazy the first few seconds. I'm like, there's probably sharks about to eat me, but you do need to be aware of the fact that they could possibly not find you. Since you can't see them, they probably can't see you.
So the first thing that we want to do is get the sails down and get the motor running. And so we run, Niall screaming orders. So I run and I grab the rope, and halfway down the mast, the rope gets stuck. And the winds now are our greatest enemy, because they are coming in and the boat is starting to tilt. So we eventually get the sail down and we start the motor up. We begin to turn around, and there's the entire ocean out there. There's a whole sea. We think we know the direction that he's in, but we don't know that. And so we're just starting to head back in the direction that we think that he was in, but who knows how off we are at this point.
Once I sort of calmed down and realized I could be lost here, just praying through, do I start swimming to what I think is a direction of land? And I realized why Niall, the captain, was saying this probably isn't a good idea. We're in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea.
Much to our great joy, in a moment, this little dot appears. And so we head toward where we had seen the dot come up in the distance.
I think once I saw the ship coming towards me, I was good. I knew that they had it figured out, they're coming. And I think, again, just thinking, okay, Dad's got this under control. I had no idea what all had gone on in the last 30 minutes, but I was relieved at that point.
I pull him in, and I'm hugging him, and I'm just glad that he's on the boat. Niall, the captain, is not happy. He's extremely mad.
And I did not know what all had transpired. So all I know is I get on the boat, and I think we're about to have a party because I'm saved. And instead, it's like this awkward silence.
And so Niall, he is so angry at this point. I mean, he's just furious. So we found an island, and I just began to, first of all, apologize for, number one, for going against authority, and that we had chosen in this situation to put ourselves under the authority of the captain. We had agreed that from the beginning. And in a moment when I thought that my way was a stronger authority than one that I had chosen to put myself under, I made a very bad decision. And so I just began to take responsibility for that. And in the process, not only had put Dawson, his life, in great danger, but actually had put all of our lives in danger. And my decision to not submit to authority had really created a very disastrous situation.
When Dad started explaining all that, it was news to me. And I realized, one is that authority always has another level, and it's set in place for everyone's safety and everyone's well-being. And then and I think partly just realizing that that's a good thing to have in our life, that it is set up so that we don't have to carry the whole burden of everything. There's someone calling the shots that knows more about it than I do. And so just understanding the importance of submitting to authorities in our lives that are there for a reason.
You know, we all have people in our lives that are an authority over us, and they're there for a reason. And you can choose to ignore that, but there can be a cost, sometimes a huge cost. Like ending up stranded without shorts in the ocean.
I'm not sure, but I think the seagulls are laughing at me.
That's not a place you want to be. But there's more to this word authority that we need to understand. Most people, when they hear that word authority, they tend to think of something outside of themselves or someone, like a police officer or a teacher or someone at work or maybe a coach or even your parents. But when we use the word authority here, we're also talking about something inside of you. What is it that drives you? What is that moral compass in your life, that moral authority that helps you make decisions? Part of the challenge you'll face with this is that there are tons of voices coming at you seeking to be that moral authority in your life. And you've got to decide and somehow figure out, which one am I going to listen to? Which one am I going to follow? So we want you to take a moment to think about this. What are those authorities in your life? What is it that guides you? Go ahead and turn in your journal to page 37. And we want you to work through the Unravel the Travel section there, and we'll see you back in a few minutes.